I was born ready, Jack. Jack, I was born ready. Are you going to remember to press record this time?
Yeah, I've pressed record.
Oh, good. Because last time we had pure podcast gold at the beginning and we missed it, didn't we?
Yeah. You're really working through letting things go really well.
No, it's just more of a healthy... Oh, look, the fire finally picked up. That's good. She's picking up. No, you know, just look, Jimmy, stop sucking up to Dad. He's doing it because there's another dog here. The revolving door of dogs in this house. Jock's back.
Puppy Jockey. Update. Jock's back. And he's more annoying than ever.
Man, he is so annoying. Yeah, Jimmy's coming back because the heater blanket's on. Yeah, that's right. Mate, you know.
Kelly had to buy a electric blanket to get Jim to come and hang out with her.
Yeah. Poor Gimby. Poor Jimmy. He just gets so cold. He gets so cold. He's got Jock here. He's just a bloody, you know, staunch fucking Scottish dog.
A buff.
A real buff. A real solid.
He's a buffaroon.
He like whacked himself into the door today. And I was like, oh, Jock, you're right. He's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Fuck off, I'm fine. He's just, but he's ball obsessed. So we've taken all of the toys in the house. Poor Jimmy, he doesn't get to suckle on his security blankets.
Yeah.
Because we had to take everything away and Jock will find a twig and just go, hey, 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 and drop it at your feet. It is really annoying.
Yeah. This is Should We Just Watch It Real Quick, the only podcast in the universe that will open the show talking about dogs. I am Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 114 years of puppy school to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it's the Italian Gelding. It's the woman that will bloody kill you for looking the wrong way at your puppy, at her puppy, or
fuck
your
yeah.
puppy, or any puppy. It's Kelly, Big Whoop, want to fight about it for Stuka.
That's me. Now, Jimmy.
Here she is.
Now, Jimmy's just absolutely mooned me, chocolate starfished me. Just fucking went to like... go down the couch a bit and just stuck his ass, his dirty little bum hole, right in my face.
Do you remember the band Chocolate Starfish?
Yeah, You're So Vain.
Yeah, they did like one cover of You're So Vain. And I think there was another song.
There was another song. I want to be a mountain. You want to be a river. Something that I mean I want to be. And he had a bald head with like a rat's tail.
Yeah.
It was, and he always wore like... he looked like Austin Powers, like he wore like a velvet jacket with like a frilly shirt and it was like way open so you could see his chest.
Yeah.
I'm just going to Google Chocolate Starfish to see what they're doing now.
I can tell you what they're doing because they came across my desk at work the other day.
Ooh.
They are playing a show, I think it's been announced, I hope it has, otherwise I'm breaching my contract. They're playing a show at Crown.
Oh my God, really?
Can you just check that on your phone that that's...
dude,
available?
Look at the guy. I know this is an audio.
Crown Casino is like
but the guy looks so old and all the hairstyle. All the guys in the back have their sunnies on. And then all the hairstyles, look, they've all got the old, you know, the really, really old school David Beckham haircut.
Yeah.
Like mohawk. Oh, my God. They're so out of, and now, oh, there's another, more recent pictures. There's four. One of them gave up the goat. Dude, that's so funny. But he looks really old, and that's okay. It's late. We're recording Sunday night.
It wouldn't be a podcast without Kelly yawning directly into the mic.
We're recording at night. Yeah, South Bank Australia, the Palms.
Yeah, October 5th and 6th.
Mate, they're doing two shows. Oh look! Oh my God! One show is 7:30, a Saturday night, then a Sunday 3 p.m. Oh boy, we should
okay.
go.
Let's be real careful about what we say about them because they're a client of my work. So
no one knows where you work, so it's fine.
Great to see Chocolate Starfish up and about. Super happy for them. Great work. What is really interesting, though, I've started working for a company that works in the music industry. It is amazing how many bands that have been around forever, like, are playing at the moment and selling out.
Mate, don't look up chocolate starfish too much because you go down a really dirty rabbit hole. Yeah, the Cold Chisel getting back
Cold
together.
Cold Chisel, Crowded House. And like, these are all the
flame trees.
It's their 50th anniversary. It's the 50th anniversary.
I'll go Cold Chisel. I wouldn't mind watching. No, I want to see when
you can go if you want.
When the war is over, Flame Trees, Cheap Wine is really fun.
Them and Crowded House are the two most popular tours we've had on sale in the last month, which is just crazy, right? Like, yeah. I like both of those bands. I'd love Crowded House, and like, we're going to see them at the Opera House, which will be amazing. This is so Australian, the beginning of this podcast. So if you're from America or England, you don't know anything that we're talking about, I apologize. Sydney Opera House, you guys would know. Anyway, yeah, it's just weird. I just wonder if it's a similar thing in other markets, like whether, you know, it's like Kiss and like in America, like is it Kiss and I can't think of other old bands, the Eagles, you know what I mean, that like do the most amount of business. It's either old rock bands because new rock bands don't seem to break through.
I saw an outdoor concert with Bon Jovi and it was really funny because it's been known for a long time that the Bon can't hit a lot of those high notes anymore because he's old and it's just that's just what happens. It's fine. It's just, you know, Mariah Carey can't hit some of the high, that's how it is. But even just like I watched it and he was like, Johnny used to work and like just when he does the whoa, you're halfway there, he always goes to the crowd. Always. And then he goes, the whoa, 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 Living on a Prayer, he doesn't do. He goes to the crowd, let me hear ya, let me hear ya. And then, because there's a few TikToks about it where it's like, oh, he's really going, let me hear you, yeah. Because he can't, yeah, that's just, they're just not there anymore.
Yeah, it's just interesting that like the shows that seem to do well are old rock bands, and when I say old, I mean bands that have literally been together 40 to 50 years, or pop, like young pop female singers. You Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo's, the list goes on and on and on and on. But there's no, like there aren't, outside of like Foo Fighters, who are also like a 30-year-old band now, like I can't think of a... Pearl Jam are also 30 years old. Like, I can't, there's no sort of young bands coming through that like sell out big stadium tours. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Young bands. Oh, I mean, if you look at K-pop, it's like through the roof.
But they're not bands. I'm talking about rock bands that write their own stuff.
But maybe rock bands aren't. But the Jonas Brothers?
No, they're a pop band as well. I'm talking about like proper rock bands. You know what I mean?
But I think I don't know if that's that it's just a thing. It's a change in the world where people, you know, don't go see them. I think that they're just not there because the flavor of music has changed for people. People are going more towards, you know what I mean? But then there'll be a resurgence, like it'll come back in where it'll, like rock bands will come back in. You know what I mean? Like,
you know where it doesn't die? South America. I was just like watching a thing the other day. Jack White from White Stripes. If he came to Australia, he would probably play somewhere like the Forum in Melbourne, which is like a 2,500-seater, 2,000-seater. I saw him play in Brazil the other day to 75,000 people. Jesus. You know what I mean? Yeah. Bands like Weezer will play to like 40,000 people in Brazil. And then they come to Australia and they play like the Palais, which again is like a 2,500-seater.
Jesus Christ. But I also would put Jack Black as in the yesteryear.
Jack White,
in the yesteryear area because I feel like
he's only 20 years. He's only been around for 20 years.
Yeah, but 20 years ago. You're talking about in the last 5 years.
I think the only band that's broken through that's a rock band is Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, but even then they don't kill like
they did.
They're not selling out like the Idol, you know, like other people are.
And Idols as well. Niche. They did. Well, I'm just thinking of the size of the venues that they've done in Australia. Arctic Monkeys did the Music Bowl. Idols are doing the Music Bowl, but not many, if any.
Not many, if any.
how many rock bands Celtic gets. What have you been watching when I'm not around, which is all the time now?
I feel like maybe I should. I mean, so I watched a documentary on Netflix about Gene Wilder, and I've always loved Gene Wilder, and it's not one of those things where, like, people are like, oh yeah, he's magical. I obviously I love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I loved him as an actor, or whatever. But I'm obsessed with Gilda Radner's book, It's Always Something. And he features, if you've never heard of this book, so Gilda Radner from the original SNL cast wrote a book. So her career was, she was doing really well, like she was doing Broadway and all this sort of stuff. And she got commissioned to write a book. So she just got married to Gene Wilder. And the book she got commissioned to write was about being a housewife. It was about her life and about being a housewife.
Mm.
And then as she started writing the book, like a few chapters in, she got diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So the book changed, you know, what it was about. And it goes back and forth between her life. Her father died quite young from a brain tumor and just all that sort of stuff. And then, yeah, the marriage with Gene. And it's just so it was the first time I read something that she wrote in the tone of my brain. Like all of my insecurities and the things I think about, like, you know, sometimes you just, you know, like, oh, we should go on holiday. What if the plane crashed? Like that part of my brain. Like she, and in reading it, I was just like, oh my God, I felt like, oh, I'm not weird. There's other people like that at me. Because she wrote in such a way where it was so easy to read. And I remember giving it to Celia and then, you know, and then afterwards she was like, oh, it's great. Like, because the way she writes, but it's also really sad because she's writing it all through the treatment. And then the last chapter, she just says, you know, when I started this book, I really thought that the ending was going to be something different than what it is. At the moment, I am, you know, I'm in treatment and blah, blah, blah. And then she tells this story about a story her nanny told her about puppies. And that's how the book ends. Like, she just tells this little story, which is quite sweet. And then you turn the page and the next chapter is written by Gene Wilder, where he said, after she wrote this, 2 weeks after this, she wrote this, she took quite a bad turn and it was 2 weeks later she died. And it's just, yeah, it's wild. And then from that, I read Gene Wilder's book. I just love him. And this doco does not disappoint. Tells you a lot of really interesting niche stuff about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and just him as this beautiful, sweet, calm man who was told from an early age, never get angry. So he tried to make people laugh, not make them angry, but it built a rage inside of him that was not healthy. And but that's how he was able to channel like this young Frankenstein man. And Mel Brooks is so old, but just talking about Gene, where he's like, oh, well, he died. I was beside myself. I still can't. Like, he's still here. You know, it's crazy. It's brilliant doco because Gene Wilder is brilliant. He's beautiful. What have you been watching?
I think, I don't know whether I spoke about this already, but I watched War Games,
Matthew Broderick. Matthew
Broderick film.
Is that where the Electric Dream song comes from? Electric Dream. That's probably a film called Electric Dream.
Yeah. It wasn't, so like, you know, anyone who listens to podcasts regularly or knows me, I'm kind of making up for lost time watching films from the 80s because my parents were always, like, to be fair, my dad was always pretty good with films. We could watch whatever we wanted. In fact, my dad kind of forced me and my sister to watch films way before we should have.
But not, you know? Leanne. She had an iron fist when it came to television on the house.
She did. But it's like, yeah, we had to watch the ABC, which is like the government channel here and stuff. And she was terrified that if we lent into American culture too much that we would become morons.
Too late. Didn't work.
Well, yeah, it's funny. It's funny stuff. It's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
You're welcome.
Love it. But yeah, it's like, so like with everything else in me and my sister's life, we spend all of our adult life trying to make up for lost time. For example, I just bought a new Xbox today, wasn't allowed to have video consoles when we were kids, weren't allowed to have fast food. Me and Stokes buy fast food every second night. And wasn't really allowed to watch like big blockbuster films. And so I spend all my spare time watching films from the 80s and 90s trying to make up for lost time. And most of the time I love it. Even if it's not a great film, I'm just loving the experience of like catching up on these films. War Games, I didn't enjoy. It's like it's a kid's film really, or like a young adult film. And you can see it's like one of Matthew Broderick's first films, if not his first film. And you can see that he's full of charisma. This is before the car accident. And so you can see why he gets cast in Ferris Bueller and all that kind of stuff. And I think Ally Sheedy is the girl in it. Like yeah. His kind of girl.
Yeah, it's Ally Sheedy.
But the script is bad. Like, essentially, he's like a hacker. He's like a proto-hacker. It's like the early 80s. And he's... It's so early, they don't have a name for the internet, but he's essentially using the internet to, like, find out about video games that are, like, you see him in the first act, he, like, changes his grades, he changes Ally Sheedy's grades, he, like, finds out what video games are coming out, like, hacks into a video game company's, like, database and stuff. And then he finds a game that's, like, a war game, and it ends up being attached to like this new computer that like the CIA and FBI have developed, and then essentially the the computer becomes sentient and starts like having a war game with Russia.
I'm reading the plot now; it's fantastic.
And like Matthew Broderick, like they find out that Matthew Broderick has broken into like the Pentagon's computer, but of course, because it's a hero's journey, he ends up being really the only one who can, like, take on the supercomputer to stop, like, Armageddon. So sounds great, right? And sounds like it would be a super fun movie, but it just doesn't. Like, I just sort of lost interest by the third act.
Oh, really? I do love this part. So they arrest him for espionage. And then David, Matthew Broderick, escapes NORAD, the bad guys, by joining a tourist group and with Jennifer's help travels to Oregon.
Yeah.
Like just, well, you're arrested but you can just join a tour group.
Well, they go, yeah, well, there's a tour group like going through the Pentagon or whatever, but they go to Oregon to try and find the guy who developed this supercomputer because like Matthew Broderick is such a computer geek. He like knows all the people, like he knows these like celebrity programmers who like, you know. Yeah, it was such a shame because I was looking forward to watching it. But yeah, didn't have as much fun as I did. I also watched Tron again for like the 112th time.
I should watch Tron. I've never seen it.
I just love it. Again, I don't know if like the plot is a little bit all over the place. Is it a great film? No. But stylistically, it's so cool and interesting and so different. Even like, I mean, there's so much like vaporwave and synthwave and 80s nostalgia and stuff in 2024. But it never really hits on Tron in the way that it wants to, you know?
Oh, man, looking at the cast list for the War Games, it's actually got a pretty good old guy cast as well.
Yeah.
Like all the guys in the army. Like, yeah, it's really, yeah. I feel like I want to give it a go even though it kind of peters off.
I didn't hate Tron, it. I just sort of like was a bit meh by the end of it.
Did they do a remake of Tron?
There is a sequel called Tron Legacy, which I saw in the cinema. And I really liked because I just loved being in the Tron world again. And Daft Punk did the soundtrack for it and it was pretty cool. But again, I think I'm on an island there liking that film.
I just remember the look of it. And at the time, it would have been so big. Like, it's like a movie in a computer. But I don't – I might try and watch it this week because I want to try and I'm trying to watch older stuff. That was big. Like I watched The Untouchables the other week.
Yeah, you didn't like it.
Yeah. Oh, I just thought it was I don't know, when it comes to gangster films, you know, Goodfellas is great, Godfather's great. This I wanted to love, and I love Robert De Niro in it because, you know, I want him dead. I want him dead. I want his family dead. you know, it's like all Al Capone, but – and I love – I actually love Kevin Costner. People shit on it, but I'm like, no, he's – no, he's actually,
Costner's good, man.
He's really good. He's a good director. And, like, when you, like, rally off a bunch of his films, like, so what? People didn't like The Postman. But Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is great. Dances yeah. with Wolves is great. Well, JFK.
He didn't direct Robin
Hood. No, I'm just saying him in it, right?
Yeah.
JFK is one of my favorite films of all time.
I know, but.
I love it. So, The Bodyguard. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. He's
Waterworld.
Great.
Waterworld.
Dude, Waterworld is actually good.
And
people
the
shit
Waterworld
on it
stunt show at in Universal. Japan, yeah. Universal,
it's so good.
Is the best.
It's really good. It's 20 minutes of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's really great. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, yeah, anyway. What were we talking about?
We were just talking about what we were watching during
it's
the week. But you didn't love Untouchables.
Oh, Untouchables, sorry. Because it's like later in the day, I had my last Ritalin at like 1. It's like 7 now. So I'm like, the ADD is strong in this one. Yeah. No, it's okay. I can get there. But yeah, Untouchables, I just felt like it was a little bit too phony. I appreciate it. I love gangster stuff. Appreciate it. But I just felt the script was really weak. I don't know. I felt like that. And it felt really predictable in a way. Like there were certain elements of it, like the Sean Connery character and. You know, but I'll take it or leave it. I'm fine.
Man, Sean Connery's so good in that film. I can't.
Hmm.
I mean, I love Sean Connery unashamedly. I know there's problems.
You're gonna punch a woman in the face.
There's problems.
And get away with
that
it, because she deserves it. She deserves a punch in the lip. Piece of garbage.
But his films are amazing. You can't look away from him.
Should we talk about the movie we watched?
Yeah. We're both struggling. We're both like our attention's being taken.
No, it's okay. So the film we watched this week is Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling and
Gosling
and that other chick. What's her name? Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt.
I've got to tell you guys.
I'm Gosling for a Blunt.
Dude,
you know what I mean?
I'm Gosling for a Gosling. The Fall Guy, got to tell you. Loved it.
Fucking fun, man.
Loved it. A plus, everybody. Good job.
No notes. End of podcast.
Yeah,
anyway,
no notes.
You.
Yeah.
This was a Damien selection. I didn't have to twist Stuke's arm too much to watch the film. Within 20 minutes of the film, I was like, baby.
Yeah.
I really like this film a lot.
Yeah.
So the guy who directed this also directed Bullet Train, which we loved.
That makes absolute sense why we liked it, because we love Bullet Train. Yeah, great. Good
job. Look, remember, all spoilers, no facts, but I'm pretty sure, if not directed John Wick, produced John Wick.
David Leitch, yes. He directed John Wick, Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2, Bullet Train and The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So this is a guy who has been a stuntman in the past, and this film is very much like I hate using the term love letter because it's so fucking cliched, but it is a love letter to practical stunts, stuntmen, action films and action TV shows of the 80s, and it's got Ryan Gosling in it. I mean, you couldn't make a film for me more than this film. Like... And it's set in Australia it's set in Australia and that's it.
Yeah.
It's not
Thank
set.
Thank God.
And when I say Australia, I mean a fucking city in Australia. It just happens to be set in Sydney.
Yeah.
No big whoop. Yeah. Want to fight about it.
Dude,
it's not set in the middle of the desert.
Guys, it can be done. We can make Australian films.
We had to have an American come and show us like, hey, man, why don't you just set a film in Australia. In Australia?
And
because
it's fine.
The it's beautiful and amazing and a great like backdrop for an action film.
And it's fine. Like, God forbid we do an Australian film that's set in the city and it's just about a thing and it's fun.
Yeah, and a fun film
like,
happens.
I don't,
why do we have to have these prestige
I'm fucking
dramas that go for 3 minutes, like 3 hours about a milliner that moved to the outback in 1874. Like, I just...
It's all outback stuff.
I don't care about that part of our culture. And it's all sad stuff.
Like, if it isn't about, you know, our abhorrent history with Indigenous Australians, then it's about pedophilia or a murder or a town secret.
Or but a psycho who lives in the middle of the desert. Yeah,
but it's always something really awful in a small town. And I'm sick of it. Yeah. I'm sick of it, guys.
It's
Come
been
on.
40 years of this
I mean,
shit.
We could write something. Let's write something that's based in Melbourne.
Let's write something. I would love to do that. I mean, like, we would kill each other, but we should write something that's
just based
in
Melbourne. Yeah, but looking back at, like, it can be done. When you look at, like, remember, like, Secret Life of Us? It was set in the city and it was about a bunch of young kids. We fucking loved that show back in the day.
I just
loved
think,
it.
Like,
it's possible.
Yeah. I also think, like, you know, and this is probably going to put some noses out of joint of people who listen to it, but, like, there's a reason why people don't go and see it. If you set your film in the middle of, I mean, people will be like, oh, what about Red Dog or whatever how it was called. You set your film in the middle of the outback, someone like myself who has lived in a city in Australia my whole life.
I can't relate anymore.
Every time I've ever gone to a country town in the middle of nowhere, I've hated it. I don't want anything to do with it. Yeah. This sort of faux Western, like country and Western culture that happens out there
as
well.
Yeah,
like
we
only
have stories to tell that are out.
I hate it.
In the middle of nowhere.
And
they're always sad stories. I mean, like the last, like you think of things like the castle. You know, it was set in the suburbs.
The castle,
and it was funny,
great.
And it was a David and Goliath story set in the suburbs, and it was perfect.
Yeah,
it was
done
perfect.
On a budget. Brilliant script. Brilliant, brilliant.
And I know it's
brilliant
easy to
script,
say, it's hard, but it's easy to say, oh, The Castle is so good because it is a great film. But I'm sure there's other films out there, but I'm
Spotswood, Malcolm, and even, you know.
Even the one with Claudia Carvin and Guy Pearce where they swapped bodies.
Yeah.
That is actually really fun. You know, and then she did another one with Hugh Jackman, it was a postcard or whatever it was, set in the outback, and it was shit.
There were films in the 90s like Proof, The Sum of Us.
Yeah.
You know, films like that would just happen to be set in Melbourne or Sydney.
Mm.
And the story, the human story is what you're interested in. The where it is isn't important, you know.
Well, this was a relief. And the thing is, yes,
Strictly Ballroom.
Strictly Ballroom's fantastic.
Muriel's Wedding.
Good. Muriel's Wedding. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
We can do it.
We can do it. It just, like, the problem is that, and I'm sure
all the money's out there.
The people who make films that we're friends with and stuff would be like, the only way to get commissioned is to get money from all the tick off from Tourism Australia because they're a government body.
Yeah, yeah.
So you immediately either have to have Sydney Harbour or Ayers or Uluru in the film. And if, you know, but
yeah, well,
but even like big productions that get made, like Baz Luhrmann makes a film in Australia, comes back, makes a film in Australia, and it's called Australia and it's set in the outback. Like,
I don't remember that film. I remember watching it. I don't remember it. But Moulin Rouge is incredible.
Yeah,
Moulin
but that's
Rouge
not.
Was amazing. No, but I'm saying, like, an Australian director, he made it.
Yeah, I love his Romeo and Juliet. Strictly Ballroom was him. Like, I like Baz Luhrmann. I don't hate Baz Luhrmann. I'm just saying, all these Australians are going off and doing well in America. Someone come home and make a film like this. We had to have Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt come to Australia and make a fucking...
Don't make it sad about sad stuff. This film, and I know it's an American film that was made in Australia, and it's clear that they're filming this movie in Australia. That's the whole thing, which is a shame that it's, you know, American based, but it still has all of the fun, silly Muriel's Wedding esque Australianisms that I fucking love. And it's funny, and the script is good, and as you said before, like playing a homage to, like, films of the 80s, or, you know, like fight scenes.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
The editing on this, the way that they create humor within editing is incredible. Like, I put my phone down. I wasn't on my phone. It was so good. But also, I wonder how much on the page I feel like on the page, this is a very my fucking ADD brain. This is a very, might be unpopular to say this, but I feel like if I read this script before I watched the movie, if I read the script, I feel like Ryan Gosling's character would have been a lot dumber, like a lot dumber on paper, and he was just he's just an oaf who gets himself in trouble, but like harmless and sweet and beautiful. But I feel like he would come across on the page as a bit daft, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
However, on the screen, Ryan Gosling has transformed it in a way where he still has those elements of like he's a bit of an idiot, but he's got a good heart and he does the right thing all the time.
Yeah.
But I feel like Ryan Gosling is a god of our time. Honest to God, because he would have read the script and he would have put his little take on little bits and pieces everywhere, and just with a nod, with a smile, with a look, with a indent in one line, you know, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Whatever. Like he would have just, he's lifted up that character to be so much more charming and dumb. And brilliant. Ryan Gosling, my goodness, he is fucking great. And the chemistry between him and Emily Blunt, remember at the Oscars when they were riffing off each other?
Electric.
Right? Like you could tell that they were mates and they were having fun with each other at the Oscars. 100% on the screen. And again, I think she read the script as it was a very straight character. 100% this was a straighter character on the page. And she has put her fucking goods behind it to make her just that little bit more fun.
Yeah. Dude,
she, both of them together, when we talked about chemistry before with movies, this is fucking it. These two.
Yeah, it's a really good example of great chemistry between the two leads. And
yeah.
Like, I think we kind of, you know, I wanted to speak about this on the back of the Baby Reindeer episode as well. I think like with each thing that we're reviewing, there's a gradient for the particular thing that it is, right? So like when I'm talking about how great this film is, I'll wrap lyrical about that in a second, but like I'm talking about this as far as a fun action movie, which is my wheelhouse. This is my speciality. This is what I've always loved, but even more so in the last 5-10 years, I've really got back into action films. And I think a lot of the time when I go and watch stuff, as much as I love superheroes and stuff, a lot of the time I feel empty when I watch superhero films. And I think watching The Fall Guy this week, I worked out why. This film makes you invest in the two main characters, but also all the side characters. So like Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Oh, God, he's so
Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who ends up, with the best thing in Bullet Train, stole that film. And then in this, he's great too.
So good.
Ends up being the bad guy. Remember, all spoilers, no facts. But so you're invested in the characters, right? And like it is a hero's journey film. Like there is definitely a structure of a hero's journey in this, but it's fun. It doesn't have to be super serious. Like that's the other thing as well. Just because you're doing a hero's journey, you know, which pretty much all superhero films are, it doesn't have to be Christopher Nolan serious. Correct. You know what I mean? Like, and I just think that Iron Man, the first Iron Man, that's what happened. It was fun, you know. Why I loved it, why it spawned 27 fucking sequels in the MCU and all that kind of stuff. This film reminded me of Lethal Weapon.
Oh,
it reminded me of Miami Vice, the TV show, but like the sort of more goofy parts of Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Boat chases and stuff like that. Like stuff you just don't really see that much in films anymore.
100%. And it does, like that kind of Lethal Weapon, like, because it's like that's what Mel Gibson had in those films. 48
Hours, Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah. Like those kind of like, Beverly Hills Cop is a comedy with a bit of action in it probably. like, I mean, it is an action film, but more of a comedy. But like Lethal Weapon, that was like, is the best example I can think of, which is
an
action film about two cops, but has some laughs in it. And The Fall Guy, like, I genuinely found myself laughing maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 times at like stuff that, you know, that what happened. There's also a lot of creative direction going on.
Do you know what I didn't realize about the director? Right? Oh, what, you right?
Yeah.
Oh. So he, what's his name? David Leitch. I didn't realize this, how dumb. He was a stunt double for years. So
I was saying before.
Yeah, but I didn't realize, like, he was a stunt double for Brad Pitt 5 times, Jean-Claude Van Damme 2 times. So no wonder it's such a funny stuntman story because he lived this life. So all the fun bits about when they're trying to film and all the lame bits of filmmaking where it's like, no, 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 darling, come here, and the shitty producer and just those producer. Little jokes.
The producer's great.
And just the way
I don't know who that actor is that plays the producer, but she's great as well.
Oh, she's in Game of Thrones, the tall blonde chick.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
The queen?
I will tell you her name.
The shame, the one that has to walk through the town.
No,
naked.
No, Hannah Waddington. Oh, no, she's in Ted Lasso.
Ah, right.
Ted Lasso, Les Mis. I feel like, no, she's in Game of Thrones. She's in the 5th series. I don't know. But she's the tall chick, whatever. But just all those little bits of like when Emily Blunt's walking with the head pyro guy and she's like, so I want to just do something like this. And he's like, yep, yep. And he's like got his headpiece on and he's like, yep. Yep, yep, yep. Okay, yeah, I'll make that happen. You pieces of fucking shit, get your shit together. Like, just that, like, part of filmmaking where, like, when you're in front of the boss, you're like, yeah, we can make that happen. We can make it happen. And as soon as they turn their back, it's just like, fuck. Just everyone's just like, get it done. We're on time. We're losing light. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I didn't realize he was that much of a stunt double, which makes sense because at the end, we're not really giving anything away, but at the end when some bad guys get arrested, it's two cops, a guy and a chick, and they're obviously quite old. And I'm like, oh, they must be people. I don't know who they are, but they must be people. So that's Lee Majors. And the chick was, so there was a fallout, Fall Boy made in the 60s.
Fall Guy.
Fallout Boy. Look out, Radioactive Man. So there was a Fallout Guy movie made in the 60s and Lee Majors.
Up and Adam.
The goggles, they do nothing. So Lee Majors and that chick were in that film. So obviously this director, which is chef's kiss, he's obviously loved this film as well and put them in this film as like a little homage, which is beautiful. Beautiful.
So just to get back to what I was saying, it's like there's so many things I love about this film, but when I'm talking about it, I'm talking about it as an action slight comedy film, right? I'm not saying like I love this film and it's the best film of the year. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is I was like, I want to watch this action film because it's got Ryan Gosling in it. I just think it's great based on that parameter. Do you know what I mean? I'm just putting that out there because I think sometimes maybe people listen to us and think that I'm like all over the place with my ratings where it's like, well, you give this 0, but you're giving this like 4.5 or whatever. Like, but it's in, you know, in relation to what I'm actually watching. Does that make sense?
I don't think anyone's really thinking about it at all, darling.
No, I think they are.
I don't think so.
But yeah, the practical stunts are amazing. Ryan Gosling's really funny. God, him and good. Emily Blunt's chemistry is fantastic. The script is not the greatest script in the world, but it's pretty airtight.
And my buddy Ben Knight's in it. What's with that weird nod?
Nothing.
I'm getting an attitude.
I'm not. You're not getting an attitude. I promise.
Oh, okay. I thought I is. Am I being one of those people? No, I just love Ben Knight. I just love Ben Knight because he's a comedian, And it's just watching him in this film is really funny because he plays like a dopey kind of bodyguard slash hitman kind of thing.
I thought he was quite menacing. Like, I thought he did a really good job with
Yeah, but he's like, it's kind of like, you know, he's tripped over if you don't. Like, no, and it's so funny because the character's like, yep, accomplished, unit one out. Like, he's got this real masculine voice. And in real life, Ben's like the sweetest of sweets. Like, he's like, hi, oh, Cal, how are ya? Like, he's such a sweet, such a good boy, such a sweet boy. And then just watching him do this voice, I'm like, look at your acting. Look at your acting, you poor bastard. But yeah, he's great. He's so, yeah, he's great in it. And then the chick from Everywhere All at Once is in it. There's a, yeah, really good casting, man. Really good. The other stunt guy that's kind of like Ryan Gosling's sidekick, or, you know, kind of best man. I actually really can't fault this film. Like, there was other elements. Like, it's just funny, like, when, you know, this chick dresses him to go to a nightclub because she's like, oh, you're not really dressed well enough to get into this place. So I'll dress you so you can get in because it's actually really, like, chic. And she just puts him in this weird fluoro gear and it's so obnoxiously funny.
There's also an Australian element as well because she was like, you're not going to get into the nightclub. You look like a pov, or you look povo.
Mm.
And Ryan Gosling's like, what does povo mean? And she was like, it means like you, what you look like. You look poor. You're not going to get in there. And I just like that little Australian word. Like, I don't know whether they picked up on it when they got here and then put it in the film or whatever.
Yeah, and then later on, Emily Blunt does the same thing. And I cannot remember the word that she says, but it's something like, oh, okay, should we have a sesh? Like session? Like, there's little kind of bits that I feel like, yeah, I wonder how much was picked up.
They're obviously then, like, or improving some stuff, but
but the core of it is strong. Like, it doesn't
to
need.
To me, it feels like, and you know, I heard people talk about this with John Wick, where it was like, this guy just like takes things that people want to see and puts it in the film, and then like that's it. I'm like, yeah, like, yeah, what do you mean? Like, it's pretty fucking simple. And I think, like, he's really, you know, like, to me it came across as like, okay, we're going to make an action film with practical stunts and the music's going to fucking rule. So, like, it'll be Journey and
soundtrack
Kiss
is
and AC/DC.
So good.
You know what I mean? And, like, why not? The like, soundtrack. Why not have that? Like,
yeah.
I'm making an action film. Why not have a soundtrack that's like also 80s throwbacks? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But not in a way, it didn't feel try hard to me. It didn't feel like, hey, I'm like it didn't feel obvious about its influences. You know what I mean? Like, we're making an 80s action film in 2024 here. You know, like, it didn't feel like I was being hit around the head by it. It would just sort of creep in and stuff. There's an actual score that uses Kiss music, which is also pretty hilarious.
Yeah, like a beautiful score that is I Always Made for Loving You. And it's really great, man.
Yeah. I don't really have...
Just looking at the soundtrack now, it's great, man. It's just great. And everything comes in at the real fucking right time. And there's one part where they have a Miami Vice... like boat chase and they play the music and it's I really liked it.
Yeah, even Gosling's wardrobe is fucking cool. Like, you at one point he's wearing a jacket that's like Miami Vice stunt crew Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And then that comes back into the film that like he worked there for 7 years.
Yeah.
And so that allows it, like, they kind of justify all the stuff that he does in the film. But then there's also like a scene that's quite like fantastical, and then there's a conversation between the two characters in the scene about how a movie's a movie. It shouldn't have to be realistic. Sometimes it can just be fun, you know? And then like the director's saying that through the film, and I'm like, I've been saying this for 30 fucking years and no one listened to me. It's like I've found like I love this director. This is now two films in a row where, like, and I really like John Wick as well. The third act is a little weak, I think, but still a great premise and a good film, good action film. But the Bullet Train and The Fall Guy, I have genuinely loved both of those films.
Yeah, man.
Like, these are great, 100%. Fun action films that sort of bounced up out of nowhere, and I didn't expect anything from them, and I've loved both of them.
So, originally, Dane Johnson, The Rock Johnson, was in negotiations to play the main character, it would have been a completely different film, and it would not have been funny.
Who is The Rock body doubling for?
Who
else on planet Earth looks like The Rock?
It's perfect. Like, Ryan Gosling is, it's perfect.
The Rock sucks.
Honestly.
The Rock sucks. He sucks as an actor. He wasn't that great a wrestler. I'm not a fan. That's going to get back to people. Anyway, all my wrestling buddies are going to come for me.
I know what else I love is that Emily Blunt.
She's great in this film.
Yeah, she took inspiration from Greta Gerwig, which is why she's always wearing that pink onesie overall.
Right, right.
Because whenever you see the Barbie thing, and I was like, fuck, that's so good.
Right.
Like, mate, all little things like that. Little things like that. Anyone else I really love is that when he gets to Australia, he's like, he's very, very like vocal about, I have jet lag. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for identifying that we have jet lag when we go from like LA to fucking, you know, Australia.
Hmm.
Jet lag is a real fucking thing.
Also, the running bit about not being able to get a coffee throughout the whole film is great.
Oh, not being able to get a coffee.
Just little runners like that are fun. And like, I'm at a point when I go to the cinema, and I'm going to watch a Hollywood film, I want to have fun. And I had fun watching this film. I can't ask for anything more. It's a good cast. It's got a couple of stars in there that burn really brightly. The script is pretty airtight. The direction is good.
The
action is fantastic. The set pieces are amazing. You even get like a Cannonball Run stunt reel at the end where you see all the stunts being done. Ryan Gosling doing a lot of his own stunts as well. Like,
incredible.
It's fucking, I loved it.
So, how's this? So, Leach said it was a love letter to stunts. We knew we had to be authentic in that world. And then it broke a Guinness World Record for the most cannon rolls in a car with 8.5 rolls performed by stunt driver Logan Holiday. Isn't that crazy?
Logan Holiday. Yeah. What a fucking great name.
Cannon rolls are performed by firing a cannon-like device into the ground from a moving vehicle. Jesus. So that must have been the bit at the end, because in that reel of all the stunts, there was one where the car was upside down and they went up to him and went, and it was like squashed and blah, blah, blah. And you see someone upside down with a helmet and they were like, are you okay? And they're like, yep, and the thumbs up.
Yeah.
The thumbs up. Oh, mate. I think I'm going to go 5 grumps.
5?
Yeah,
wow.
I can't really fault it. And Ryan Gosling, it's like if I was going to do a 4.5, I have to give the extra half because I cannot. Guys, Ryan Gosling is a god. He is. He is. And after doing that and then what he did in Barbie, no notes. No notes.
You know what? Because I think I gave Bullet Train 4 or 4.5, and I enjoyed this slightly more than Bullet Train. Mm. And I fucking loved Bullet Train.
Yeah, you did. We both did. Yeah.
Maybe I have to give it 5 grumps as well.
It's fun. It's what? Because it's like every time I want to like go, oh, no, does it deserve 5? I'm like, it knows exactly what it is.
You can't mark it down. It knows it's fun. Yes.
It knows exactly what it is.
That's the thing. Right, like people will ask me legitimately, like, how can you like pro wrestling, or how do you get into pro wrestling? I'm like, because the ones that I watch, and even the ones that I don't, they know what it is. Mm-hmm. Everyone involved in it knows what it is, mm-hmm. and even the fans, and so everything is directed about people trying to have as good a time as possible.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And this film is that.
It knows exactly what
it
is.
I wasn't going into The Fall Guy hoping to have my life changed or think or have a different perspective on life or anything like that. There's plenty of films that I watch that where that happens. What I did want to see is I wanted to see a change in the attitude towards how action films are made in Hollywood. And there's one guy who is single-handedly trying to do it, and it's this guy. And yeah, so, like, you can hang as much shit as you want on these films. I'm going to keep going to see them. Everyone fucking jerks their dick about Tom Cruise and the Mission Impossible films and everything's practical and blah, blah, blah. Well, this guy's doing it as well.
Yeah, man.
And I'm not, the Leech isn't getting any kudos for what he's doing in the way that he makes films. So I'm willing to give him 5 grumps just for the attempt.
Yeah.
But then he sticks the landing on almost every count, right?
Because he's a stunt guy.
Yeah. I want a big, dumb, fun Hollywood action film, and that's what I got. I can't remember having this much fun watching an action film in the cinema since, like, I was a kid watching things like Lethal Weapon.
I mean, probably, like, because I guess we don't go to the movies as much anymore because they come straight to us. But I feel like when I watched Bullet Train, I had the same, like, this is fun.
Yeah.
This is a fun film. I knew exactly what it was.
Yeah, man.
And it's the same.
Not everything has to be Oppenheimer. Not everything has to be, like, a statement about, like, this is, you know, like. Yeah,
life's pretty fucking ugh sometimes. Can you just give me 2 hours to laugh?
Yeah.
About something really fun and silly. I don't have to think too hard. There was no, like, big. It was just basically, hero's journey, has to redeem himself. You know, there's a bad guy. He'll get nailed. If he gets with a girl, gets with a girl. But it's, mate, 5 grumps.
I thought the love story was really good. Like, I was actually engaged in that as well.
It was because they're fun.
Blunt and Gosling made it feel real. And, like, you like both of them, so you want them to get together. There's no. That was another thing as well. I think Blunt's character is written well. Like, she is, like,
she's written really well.
She's not just the love interest. Like, she is
she's
her
a
own
director.
Person.
Yeah.
Like, she's in charge of the film that they're all working on and stuff. But she's also a human being. And, like, the scene where she sings Phil Collins at karaoke.
She's about to say that. We haven't touched on that.
Is, like, really touching but also hilarious at the same time because you can feel her pain, but you also know that what she's upset about is not real.
It's really good. Yeah. Like, she's at karaoke and he's supposed to meet her there and he doesn't because he's getting framed for murder.
Yeah, he's also getting the shit kicked out of him by Stooks's mate, Ben.
Ben, yeah. So she's really sad. So then she's like, I'm going to change my song. And she's like, you know, take a look at me now, which is also a film from a movie, another homage, which is great. It's just an empty space. And as she's singing this song, this sad song, you just see, like, in the background of the karaoke bar, this, like, truck going past with Ryan Gosling's character getting the shit beaten out of him.
Like,
it's beautiful.
The exact same street. And, like, it sounds cheesy, but it's not
it's
the way
it's funny.
That it's
and but then also the guy running the karaoke is Aussie. And he's like, okay, who we got up next?
Man,
and it's
guy,
fun.
The guy doing the karaoke.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
Exactly what karaoke's like in Australia.
Yeah.
Where there's always, like, it's I mean, if it's not a comedian, it's like a fun guy who, like, you know. I used to go to a karaoke thing called Extreme Karaoke. It was at Laundry.
Oh, God.
And the guy who did it, who I still kind of know now. I can't remember his name. Mm. It's really bad. But a nice guy. But he was exactly like that kind of thing. Where he's a mate of Andy McClellan's. Anyway, but yeah, the exact same thing where he'd be like, okay, coming up next, we've got, some spice, because it's time to get some spice in your life with Kelly.
Mate, I love
Kelly.
It.
Kelly. Yeah. Come on, Kelly. Don't be shy.
Colors of the world, spice up your life. Every boy and every girl, spice up your life. Okay, I got to eat, man. We got to wrap up. Shake it to the left. Are you having a good time?
Shake it to the right.
Stop right now. Thank you very much. Mate, Spice Girls, listen, I love them and they're great and they're fun and they know exactly what they are. Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. We really love you. We hope you like this episode. Tell your friends.
Give us
a 5-star review on iTunes.
Hey.
Share. Tell everyone. We love it.
Hey,
thanks for listening.
Come here. Come real close to the headphones.
I'm hungry. He's got to do a
joke. Come real close to the headphones.
Yeah, he's got to do a joke.
I love you.
Love you.
Love you.
I love you very much.
Love
thanks,
you
everyone.
Real hard.
Love you. Bye.